In the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, we ask that you bless us as we continue our reflection on Brothers Karamazov. We ask that you grant us deep insights into human nature, selves, and history. We ask this through Christ our Lord. There's a lot of people not here. I'm guessing that's because it's fall break. Anyhow, let's look at book three, The Sensualist. So it kind of raises a question. For all of us, are we determined by our nature to be who we are, or is there something that is beyond nature? So anyway, that's something to think about. A little bit more than that question of difference between nature and nurture, because we have the example of these four brothers, right? At this point, we know that there are four brothers, and each of them is quite different, and yet, at the same time, they're also very similar, right? So, one of the things that seems to be a common phenomenon among all four of them is the connection to their father as a sensualist. So, what does that mean? What does it mean to say that they are sensualists? Yeah.
Well, a lot of different ways you can be.
Right.
He should be ruled by emotion.
Yes, I think that that's kind of the key. But they're overpowered. They can be overpowered by their emotions. Particularly, it seems, by the emotion of romance, right? All of them. You see that. So it's interesting. Okay, just if we go through this, the servants' quarters, right? Okay, gotcha. Well, there's a whole lot here in the servants' quarters that's talked about, right? One thing we hear a little bit more about Grigory and Marfa, right? So Grigory and Marfa, they actually have a child, don't they? But Grigory's response to the child is really kind of heartbreaking, isn't it? I mean, his natural, but even that though, it's a natural, I mean, not natural, but it's like, it's a visceral response that he has, right? Something that he doesn't seem to be able to control, even to the point of saying that the baby should not be baptized. But regardless, once the child does die, he seems to have a love for the child and provides for a casket and a nice burial. So, I don't know. And it also seems to make him a little bit more of a religious person after this experience. And literally the night of the funeral for the child, Lizaveta comes in, right? And she has a child inside of the garden. Why do we suppose that this happens? Exactly. That's exactly right. That's why we say Smerdyakov is very likely Fyodor Pavlovich's son as well. So, yeah, that's good. They were able to save the baby, but not Lizaveta. Obviously, it's pretty tragic. I mean, you think about Fyodor Pavlovich being out in the town with his friends, and I mean, it's one thing for him to be able to see the dignity of another person, right? Because this person is in some way mentally, but it's another thing then to take advantage of that person the way that he does. Clearly does. It really is. Yeah. Well, that's true. That's very true. And isn't it interesting that, I don't know, I noted this, that Fyodor Pavlovich, he prays for his first wife, but not he doesn't worry about his second wife. He knows that his first wife needs the prayers. His second wife, he saw as a saint and didn't think she needed the prayers. So, okay. All right. So now we get to the point where Alyosha, he runs into his brother, right? And, oh, I'm sorry. I'm on page 87. The Confession of a Passionate Heart. Okay. So it's a little bit complicated what's going on, right? I mean, it's just a little complicated. So anybody want to take a stab at explaining what happened? So Dmitri, right? Is a soldier. He knows that his general is having money problems, right? And so what he does is offers to get this guy out of trouble by lending the money to Katerina, right? To Katya. And in lending this money, he's trapping her, right? He's kind of trying to draw her in and put her in a position of compromise where she has to earn the money, right? By doing a favor, by doing a sexual favor for him. He doesn't make her do that, but you get the impression that that's what he wants to do, right? Now, the strange thing about that is that he gets this money from his father, right? He loans the money to Katya, who uses it to get her father out of trouble. And then her father dies of brain fever, right? Which is not an uncommon, whatever the brain fever is. That seems to be a common form of death. Of course, you know, you've got the drama of catching, you know, right before he commits suicide, she stops him and everything like that. And it's quite a dramatic story, isn't it? How does Dmitri see himself? He sees himself, he calls himself an insect, right? So he understands, like, that he doesn't see himself highly, right? He understands what he has done is a bad thing, right? And I think one of the things, you know, we think about a theological reflection on page 94. This is kind of not a bad theological reflection, I think. It says, too many riddles weigh men down on earth. We must solve them as we can and try to keep a dry skin in the water. Beauty. I can't endure the thought that a man of lofty mind and heart begins with the ideal of the Madonna and ends with the ideal of Sodom. What's still more awful is that a man with the ideal of Sodom in his soul does not renounce the ideal of the Madonna, and his heart may be on fire with that ideal, genuinely on fire, just as in his days of youth and innocence. Yes, man is broad, too broad indeed. And I think that this is a reflection, this is a really important paragraph here, because it reflects the theological anthropology of Dostoevsky, which is to say that every human person has a capacity for both great good and great evil, even at the same time, right? So even Dmitri and Alyosha and Ivan, all of these characters, they all have a capacity for good, they have a capacity for evil. And really, Dostoevsky, in all of his characters, whether we're talking about the Brothers of Karamazov or his other characters in other books, highlight this almost schizophrenic dynamism between the capacity for great good and the capacity for great evil. Perhaps, I don't know, if you guys remember, anybody has read Crime and Punishment, and you remember the character Svidrigailov. That guy is like, does anybody remember that book? Okay. Well, no need to go into all the detail, but simply to say that he has a capacity both for great good and great evil. Okay. I would say the same. I think probably the book that highlights this the most clearly is Crime and Punishment, right? But anyway, it's definitely reflective of the human heart. And he's okay. So going on, he says, God and the devil are fighting there, and the battlefield is the heart of man. But a man always talks of his own ache. Listen now, come to facts. So I like that.
You know, well, and, mm-hmm. you choose good and you choose evil.
Yep.
Everybody can make that choice. At least what I've gotten, the opposite of love is hate, the opposite of love is using somebody. Mm-hmm. Seems to be
that. I like that.
So far, seem to be trying to consume or use women or each other and their father. And
I like that. It's very well said. It's great. That's good. I like that. Okay. What is it? Okay. You guys have had the benefit of being able to read these two sections, and maybe we can look at each of the characters, right? I think particularly to contrast Katerina with Grushenka, right? How would we contrast these individuals?
In other words, highly manipulative woman, or is she just someone that's hired by them? It's kind of, I'm not sure what she gets.
Well, that's a great question. We find out more about Grushenka as we go along in her history. Her history says a lot about her, which is to say that in some ways she's kind of a victim of the circumstances. And she is, up to this point, I don't know if this is self-evident from the text that's there, but she is basically helping out this guy, this man, who has a lot of money, and she's basically running his money for him. And she's getting a little bit of money for that. And it's evident that this guy is attracted to her, right? And, you know, Dostoevsky doesn't say, does she provide him with any physical benefits, right? Sexual benefits. That's not evident. It's not clear. But it seems to be implied, though. So she's well off financially. But she is and she isn't. Like, she came from poverty, but she was able to... What can we say? She really did. And she works, and she's very industrious. That's what I would say. She's very industrious. Oh, yeah, yeah. One. Okay, good. I'm asking about... basically what we know is that Katya gets the money. She's able to get her father out of this issue, right? You know, you would think that Katya would resent Dmitri for what he's done, right? Because he's basically put her in a position of compromise. He gives her the money that she needs to get her family out of this position of potential shame and perhaps even losing everything. But, you know, I mean, basically, he puts her in a position where she offers herself. He offers herself to him. And he doesn't take her up on it, but... he puts her in that position. And obviously, that's not what matters, right? I mean, it's the fact that she was put into this position. But wouldn't you think that if that were the case, she would hate him? But she doesn't hate him.
But who else would loan her money?
Well, I mean, so what's kind of like at least somewhat ironic is like Katya is a person of pride, right? She's a very prideful person. If there was one word that I would use to describe her, it's pride, right? But
women can be drawn to the wrong men, even though it's clear to everyone else that she's wasting her life.
Yes.
So it's almost the same dynamic.
And they get engaged, right?
And he tells her, like, he tries to break it off, and she's like, no, I can go anyway.
I think she saw good in him.
She saw good in him, yeah.
Well, she thought she could save him.
I think that's it. Yeah, maybe that's it. Yeah.
She loves her own virtue.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, pride, right?
Can't save him.
Yes. Right.
She's no different than Grushenka. Like, she used her, you know, even though she feels superior.
Yeah. Okay, good. I got a little bit ahead of myself, but why don't we look at, let's see.
You didn't. We're asking the comparison of Lisa.
No. It's Grushenka and Katya. Because Dmitri is engaged to Katya, which I think it's important to point out that an engagement was more than just what it is today. It doesn't mean much today, but it actually had significant meaning. It was really hard to get out of an engagement. It was kind of like getting married, almost the same as being married. So he was committed to her, betrothed to her, and that meant a lot. So it would be very difficult for him to get out of that betrothal once it's been done. So it doesn't mean the same thing that it means today. It meant more. So he's betrothed to Katya, but he's fallen in love with this Grushenka, right? If pride is how we would describe Katya, what word might we use to describe Grushenka? What is it? Yeah, that's a great word for her. I think that's wonderful. I like that. Capricious is wonderful. It's a great definition. Is there another word that comes to mind? Yeah, that is true. I love that scene. I mean, that's just masterfully written, that scene. But, well, we'll get there. But that scene where, yeah, that's masterfully written by Dostoevsky. But we'll get there in a minute. Yeah.
I think she knew exactly what she was doing every step of the way. They couldn't see it.
So country statement.
Just like inside the victory that they didn't like, but they couldn't control.
Conniving.
Conniving's better word.
Or, yeah, she's also very shrewd, right? I mean, she seems to be very good with money and things like that. Yeah, yeah.
I know what she wants them to be.
Yeah. Okay, let's look at Smerdyakov on page 108. What do we know about Smerdyakov? The son of Lizaveta and Fyodor Pavlovich. We presume that that's the case, right? Well, it's pretty evident that that's the case. Yeah, he hangs cats, and then he has funerals for them. That sounds sociopathic, right? So even in Dostoevsky's day, they say that Dostoevsky in some ways is like the father of psychology, because he has just the ability to masterfully articulate different disorders. So I would say Smerdyakov is a sociopath. I think it's pretty fair to say that he's a sociopath. But we notice, okay, so he also suffers with epilepsy. And remember that Dostoevsky, he suffers with epilepsy, right? So what's that? Yeah. So epilepsy is the condition where you have seizures. So that's not really here or there. It does become important later in the narrative. But what does it mean? You also have to understand what people thought about those who had epilepsy in the 19th century. Yeah, they thought that it meant that a person was mentally troubled at best, or mentally deficient at worst, right? So it would be reflective of a person who was kind of on the edge of the world. Now, remember, Dostoevsky also has epilepsy. So he's very familiar with it, and he's able to describe it very well also. So, but he always has a character in the book that has epilepsy in all of his books. So somebody always has epilepsy, at least somebody. Okay. So they send Smerdyakov off to this cooking school, right? And he comes back, he's able to cook, but he also is very well-dressed, right? It says he has contempt for the female sex. Is he an incel? You know what an incel is? Involuntary celibate. Like women don't like him, but so he can't find a woman. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but remember this interesting conversation that he has with Fyodor Pavlovich, right? He tries to say, don't you want a woman, right, at some point? And then he gets really angry and just kind of storms off. So, yeah. So anyway, there's something not right about his ability to have relationships with other people. And obviously, I don't know what that means, but anyway. Also, I've looked this up before, by the way. They liken Smerdyakov to one who is a contemplative. Contemplative, right? This is on page 112. So I don't know if anybody had a chance to look up that painting. You didn't, by Kramstroy. But it's a good cultural representation, but basically he's talking about how Smerdyakov has the ability to kind of just like enter into a solitudinal state. And is he in a state of contemplation? I don't know. He seems to be able to dissociate in some way. Yeah.
That's what he's going to say. That's like, you have heard of it.
Yeah, it is. You're right. For some people, that's how they have seizures. Yeah. So, yeah.
Psychotic.
Yeah. So, just an interesting person, right? Very interesting. Correct. That too. I mean, that very well could be. That very well could be, yeah. I mean, I didn't even think of that until now. So, that's possible as well. Anyway, okay. So, between Smerdyakov and Ivan has come to visit his father, but Ivan has also somebody that Smerdyakov looks up to, right? Do we remember that? And they get into an argument, right? And it's kind of an interesting argument. We see how, well, first of all, what's the dynamic, divine lemma. If I was, do you remember this? Christian who's about to be martyred.
Yeah. About to be martyred, not renounce your Christianity.
Correct.
But then it was saying, well, you know, you can go ahead and renounce it, then you can ask for forgiveness later.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. That's exactly right. Just by simply contemplating it, it's done. Immediately you're done. And so then you've already given up on God. Anyway, it's kind of a nominalist argument, right? Like, what does your, how strong is faith? And what does it really mean to believe? Of course, we can see that he's not a person of belief, right? And Ivan has is also not a person of faith. And so we have this dynamic of Smirjakov trying to impress Fyodor Pavlovich and trying to impress Ivan, right? And what does Fyodor Pavlovich say? Calls him a Jesuit. So why does he do that? Obviously, Dostoevsky is not impressed by the Jesuits. Right? Casuist, exactly. Do you know what a casuist is?
It's some way very clever arguments, but there's something wrong with I can't be more articulate about it. And I think the Jesuits must have gotten a bad name by being associated. It's never. Yeah, Smirnoff, you know, his argument is. I'm pretty casuistic to me.
Exactly.
I mean, it's really hard to refute, but it doesn't really make sense.
So what is a casuist? I could give you the history of that, but that would probably be beyond the scope of this. Let me just say that the term casuist comes from a methodology of teaching that is essentially presenting cases. Cases.
Okay.
So it's a method of teaching. And the Jesuits develop in the 19th century what eventually does become proportionalism, which is essentially a line of reasoning. And I think this, I don't know if this is getting ahead of it, but to say that if the ends are good enough, they can justify any means. And so that's kind of a little bit the critique. Maybe we shouldn't read too much into it, though. I don't know that Dostoevsky would have been that well aware. I'm aware of that because of my doctorate in moral theology, but I don't know how aware of this he would have been. What's also interesting, though, to me is this discussion about Russian faith. So what's the belief of Russian faith? There's some desert hermit somewhere out there that's a holy person and holy enough that they have faith to move mountains. Maybe most of us don't, but there's somebody out there who does. And that's, as Fyodor Pavlovich says, Russian all over. Well, it's a blending of, what is it? I'm sorry. Let's see. It's the mixing of superstition with faith, right? Russian faith has a little bit of irrationality associated with it. It's a little bit superstitious. That's what I would say. Okay. And then Ivan talks about Smirjakov and says he's raw material for revolution. A little bit interesting, isn't it? I think it tells us a little bit about Ivan's position and his belief, right? He's kind of in line with, well, remember that he's essentially a liberal, and I'm talking about a liberal in the sense that I mean of the 1860s, right? The ones that got Dostoevsky arrested and got him in trouble. Okay. Do you remember that? We talked about the history of Dostoevsky a little bit. Okay. This is interesting, right? This continuation of a discussion. They even say that Father Zossima is a sensualist. Here that Fyodor Pavlovich says that there's something interesting about every woman, right? All right. And then we have this fight that takes place, right? I guess that's very exciting. Dmitri comes in, he strikes Grigory, and then he kicks Fyodor, right? Two or three times. So everything's kind of being set up so that it looks like Dmitri has it within him to kill his father, right? Just keep that in mind. What brings him here is the belief that Grushenka is there, right? Because Grushenka is playing Fyodor off of Dimitri. So she's playing the two of them off of each other. And then we have this quote once again, one reptile will devour the other. Page 127. Yeah. I thought that this describes Katharina the best. This is on page 129. The second full paragraph, he says, he was struck, this is Alyosha, he was struck by the imperiousness, proud ease, and self-confidence of the haughty girl. So this is pretty good description right there. Proud, self-confident, haughty. That describes Katharina very well, right? Which is how she's able to get herself fooled, right? And I'm talking about fooled by Grushenka, because Grushenka has convinced Katharina that she's willing to give up Dimitri, which is why Katch is so excited. She's all excited that Grushenka is going to give up Dimitri. The reason for that is because there's an old boyfriend, right, that has reappeared in Makro, a soldier from 5 years ago that Grushenka was in love with. But that's not exactly what happened. So I don't know. I just think that that's an incredibly entertaining chapter. I really enjoy that passage, that chapter.
Maybe you'll love her forever, but perhaps you will be happy.
Anyway, that's very entertaining to me. I'm sure you guys enjoy it too. Anyway, after this encounter, Alyosha leaves and he runs back into Dimitri. And we have an important moment of foreshadowing that you don't really see unless you've read the book already. Okay? So what is it that is essentially the situation? Like, what is the conflict? What's the basis of the conflict? Money. Dimitri has borrowed money from Ketcha, right? What did he do with this money, allegedly? A little bit more than allegedly. He went off to Mock Row, right? And he had a massive party, and he spent a ton of money, and he spent all his money, allegedly. Yes. And he's got to pay this money back to Ketcha, okay? And it's a matter of pride for him that he has to do this. It's not that she needs it, but he feels like that it's what's tying him still to her. And he feels like that if he can just give this 3,000 rubles back to her, she will let him off the hook and then break the engagement and they won't have to be together anymore. So he's trying to get the money from Fyodor Pavlovich, right? He wants the 3,000 rubles so that he can pay Ketcha back. All right. But does he already have the money? Well, I mean, we don't know the answer to that, right? I mean,
Dimitri. Yeah. Pretty good stories.
Okay, so far he doesn't. We're led to believe that the answer is that he doesn't. Okay? But there's a point where in the narrative, and I'm only going to point it out to you, but this is an important point. It's at the bottom of the page 139. Stay, Alexei. One more confession to you alone, cried Dimitri, suddenly turning back. Look at me. Look at me well. You see here, there's a terrible disgrace in store for me. As he said here, Dimitri struck his chest with his fist with a strange air, as though the dishonor lay precisely on his chest, in some spot, in a pocket, perhaps, or hanging around his neck. Okay? Not much there, but it's an important point of foreshadowing to come. Okay? Not much there today. So Alyosha returns to the monastery and Father Zosima is dying. He spends a little bit of time with her. And then he gets a note that he's received right from Lisa. And Lisa basically confesses that she loves him. So that's the ending of book three. Any thoughts for book three? Yeah. Madame Holokov's daughter.
Right, okay.
Yeah. She's the one that's... Well, yeah, I think they're staying in the same place, but I don't think that they're sisters. So Lisa is probably suffering from conversion disorder or hysterical paralysis, but she's wheelchair bound for the moment, but she knows she's getting better.
And they all are described in considerable detail, and it's very important. Like there's the monk becomes, just happens to be a from another monastery.
Yeah.
Guy is very curious and knows.
Yeah.
He's in
Yes, this is Father Farapot. Yeah. Good. So that's what we're going to talk about now. It's Father Farapot. Yeah, that's where we're at right now. No, it's good. This is the beginning of the book.
Sorry.
No, it's the beginning of book four. It's the first chapter in that is on Father Farapot. So we have the contrast between Father Zossima on the one hand, Father Farapot on the other. And then we have this monk from Obdorsk, right? And the monk from Obdorsk is kind of standing in as a judge, if you will, right? He's an observer. He's seeing the difference between monasticism according to Father Zossima, who is entrenched in the elder system, and then Father Farapot, who's not a priest, by the way, right? We're told he's not a priest. He's a brother. But what is the contrast between Father Farapot and Father Zossima? Yeah, yeah, yep. Exactly. That's exactly right. And Father Farapot is extremely austere, right? He lives a life of extreme asceticism. I mean, so extreme in his asceticism, he eats like 2 pounds of bread every couple days, right? And he says that he's so ascetic that he could live on mushrooms in the woods. Doesn't even need the bread that the monastery bakes and gives to him. And he's off by himself all the time, right? He's in a hermitage behind the apiary. It's an apiary. Yeah, that's right. That's good. It's a bee place. So he's literally off on his own, completely off on his own. And he's kind of a curmudgeon too, right? He's not a joyful person at all. He's not joyful at all. And I would also say that he is pretty definitively schizophrenic. Wouldn't we say that?
Like crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure he's schizophrenic. I mean, because he sees devils, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, he's seeing these characters, and I love that description of how he goes to the Father Superior's office, and there, standing in a corner, is the devil, and he gets the devil's tail caught in the door, and he slams the door on the devil's tail, and then the devil dies, and he's laying there stinking in the office even now, I'm sure of it. So, anyway, it's very entertaining, but we see a contrast between Farapot and Zossima. I think it's an important contrast, right? And I think that it is important because, well, I guess, let me put it this way. I'm a priest, right? So I'm looking at this and saying, this says a lot about what it means to be a good priest versus what it means to be a bad priest, right? And this observer from Obdorsk seems to be really impressed by Father Farapot. But is Father Farapot really a good monk? I don't think he really is. I think that, you know, even in his description of Jesus, at night I see Jesus in the arms of this tree, and it's terrifying. And as the monk points out from Obdorsk, shouldn't that be a good thing that you see Jesus, not a bad thing? Shouldn't you not be afraid? So, I mean, he's very austere. He seems to be doing what we would expect of a monk, but he's not living a life of charity. And that's what's, I think, important. So it's really big contrast, right? All right, so, yeah, who? Oh, Piacy. Yeah, Piacy. Sorry, so sorry. Father Piacy. Yeah. Yeah, yes. So Father Piacy is he the librarian? I can't remember, but basically he becomes like he takes the place of the elder when he dies and becomes kind of like the mentor to Alyosha once. Yeah, it's very reasonable, rational. Yeah. Okay, no, that's great. I'm sorry. I was laughing because I love this section on page 158. Okay, so Alyosha begins the day by going to visit his father. His father, of course, is in a very cantankerous mood. He's very upset. He's recovering from his wounds, so to speak. And his father says, and by the way, Mitya, of course, is also Dmitri, right? It's short for Dmitri. He says, and I'll crush Mitya like a beetle. I squash black beetles at night with my slipper. They squelch. You tread on them. And your Mitya will squelch too. I love that. Great description. Let's see. Oh, okay. Now we're on to chapter 3, right? This we end up getting into this situation, explanation of what happens with between Alyosha and this child, right? I'm going to go forward a lot to figure out. Ilusha. The child's name is Ilusha, although we're not told what his name is until later. But Ilusha is the son of the captain that Dmitri shames, right?
He, you know, all of a sudden it's just like he
Snegiryov, whatever.
Snegiryov.
He's put up to this, but he's supposed to go to Kachin, who had to get got didn't have an IOUs at Dmitri.
That's right. I didn't ever even thought about like that. I wasn't
wanted,
that's a great question.
He wanted Kachin to sue that with a lot.
Yeah, that's a great question. I can't remember why they get into this conflict. Regardless, he drags him out by his beard.
I don't think he liked his looks.
Well, I think it was more than that. I think what you were saying, it had something to do with he was trying to get business. Yeah, there was some issue with that.
Having business.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, anyway. Okay, so he's been shamed, right? That's what's important. I guess it doesn't really matter why exactly. And so the boys in the... That's another thing about Dostoevsky is that he did have a great love for children and he had the ability to write children well. So he really understood the mindset of children. And that's kind of really an important thing. We see it demonstrated for us in this text here, right? They fight, they throw rocks at each other, and then eventually Ilusha bites Alyosha's finger. He knows that Alyosha is the brother of Dmitri. And so the resentment, the anger, it's really all directed to Dmitri. But Alyosha, of course, he has no idea why this guy, this little kid, is so angry. But anyway, regardless, he was on his way and is on his way to Madame Holikoff, right? And so when he gets to Madame Holikoff, Vaughn has just left, right? Or is just leaving. Of course, they find out that his finger is bit and that he needs to get all this attention because of that, right? No. Okay, but then we also have this, all right, this dynamic going on between Alyosha and Lizaveta, right? Also, I'm not sure that we've pointed this out, but Ivan seems to be in a romantic relationship with Katya, right? Or at least wants to be, right? Yeah. So pretty dynamic, right? I mean, a lot of complexities here. So on the one hand, you have Fyodor, the father, fighting with Dmitri over Grushenka and money. You also have Dmitri, who's engaged to Katya, but Ivan is in, they're pursuing Katya, and Dmitri's trying to get away from Katya, but Katya seems to be pursuing Dmitri, and Dmitri is pursuing Grushenka. Yeah, so, and Fyodor, exactly. So she's kind of like in that triangle there as well. And then we also have this guy, the soldier from 5 years ago that's outside, right? And anything else? I mean, a little bit more. Grushenka is living with this moneylender as well, right? He does, exactly. In fact, at the point in, when we get to this point in chapter 5 of this book, The Laceration in the Drawing Room, Alyosha is kind of put on a spot, right? Where he's asked his opinion. He's kind of forced to say what he thinks, right? What does he ultimately say, or how exactly does he articulate things?
Question that Katerina was in.
Yeah. Yeah.
He says that Katerina, Dmitri did not really get to was.
Right. Page 173. Exactly. So what's the point? I tell you, Alyosha went on with desperate haste as though he were jumping from the top of a house. Call Dmitri. I will fetch him. Let him come here and take your hand and take Ivan's hand and join your hands. For you're torturing Ivan simply because you love him. You're torturing him because you love Dmitri through self-laceration with an unreal love because you've persuaded yourself. Complicated, right? You're a little religious idiot. That's what you are. Yeah. Yeah. So it's kind of weird, right? I mean, self-laceration, what does that mean? She likes to torture herself. She's in this relationship this pursuit dynamic with Dimitri as a form of self-laceration. And she's even like kind of like a puppet master holding Yvonne in this relationship with herself because she likes to torture him. Again, it goes back to this question of pride, right? No, I agree. I definitely agree. Yeah. So, okay. She keeps Yvonne to revenge Dimitri. The more he insults you, the more you love him. That's your laceration. You love him just as he is. Love him for insulting you. That's the key. If he reformed, you'd give him up at once, cease to love him. But you need him so as to contemplate continually your heroic fidelity to reproach him for infidelity. All comes from your pride. Well, that seems to be the ticket. So again, it's rooted in pride. Dostoevsky has the ability to articulate the complexity of the human person in a way that really probably no one else has ever been able to do. It's a very complex dynamic, isn't it? What we have going on here. So if one thing in the system were to change, if Dimitri were somehow magically to become a good person, then Ketcha would no longer pursue him. So it's kind of a strange dynamic. Okay, so now she sends him off to visit with Captain Snegiryov, right? So he gets to the Captain Snegiryov's house, and what, you know, this is a house of real poverty, isn't it?
Together.
Yeah, of course. Exactly. I did.
He kind of knew it, but it locked it in.
Right. Exactly. Anyway, the Alyosha has come to bring 200 rubles to Captain Snegiryov. I don't think he realizes that this is the boy's house either, does he?
He probably got it together. During that, when he was in the house, figured it out, and the boy talked.
Anyhow, well, we certainly see that Captain Snegiryov has a lot of problems, doesn't he? I mean, he's got one daughter that's an invalid. His wife is kind of an invalid. His other daughter is trying to complete her studies, but doesn't have the money to do so. Ilyusha, his boy, is sick. He's got tuberculosis, right? Consumption, call it. And so he's definitely got no shortage of problems, to say the least. They don't really welcome Alyosha to begin with, right? And does he want Ilyusha to be beaten? No, he doesn't want that. I think Captain Snegiryov believes that's what he wants, right? Him having bitten his finger, but that's not really what he wants. Ilyusha wants to defend the honor of his father. What Dimitri did, like pulling him by his beard, that's an offense. It's a very grievous offense, okay? Bad enough that, you know, he could call him to account with a duel. And by all accounts, probably should. But why doesn't he?
Responsibilities.
Yeah. He can't afford to die. He can't afford to lose his own life. He has to be there to provide for his family.
Even if he was wounded, then he would just be a mouth to feed.
Yeah. Yep. So even though he may want to defend his bride, I'm sorry, yeah, his honor, he can't do it. Yep. So Ketch is offering him a way out, right? Maybe even a way of being able to save the life of his son. He can get out of the town and go, well, not just, but I mean, restart and have a different reputation, but go out of the town and go to a place where the weather is better so that he can recover from this tuberculosis that he's got. There's lots of opportunity here. He offers him this money, but he doesn't take it, does he? It's almost like a completely, he does. Yeah.
You mentioned pride in the prior book. It was set up, and this is unutterable.
Yep.
Took the 200 rubles, which is $2,500 today. I had to look it up.
You guys read the Idiot.
Much money.
There's a similar story in The Idiot. I'm not going to give it away, but I mean, that's a wonderful book too by Dostoevsky. He loves flouting monetary gain in this way. They're all, anyway, so that's quite a, Dostoevsky loves that, right? It's really a matter of pride. That's absolutely right. Because he says, how could I go before my son if I take this money?
Yes, he built that up for your father.
Yeah.
Because
he did.
Father and his son on walks at night.
Yep.
That's just get a horse, get a black horse, get a carriage, just move to a new town.
Yep.
Dad said, yeah, let's do it. Here comes Alosha. They go outside and talk. Gets excited, gets the money. But just, I reread that over and it ends with utterable pride.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, it's an interesting dynamic too, though, isn't it? Because we have a father and son dynamic going on there too.
Yeah. Right? Because the person's responsible for his family. His way out of it is, to help his family.
I know.
He won't.
I know. I kind of know what goes on further in the book, but
yeah.
But at this point, it's.
I don't know. I think it's fascinating, just fascinating to see that response. I think it's shocking because really many of the people who probably read this book would say, if I just had that much, think about how that might change my life.
You know, this will enable me to do A, B, C, D.
Yeah,
it
turns around. It was just
power. Yeah. That's the way Dostoevsky is. We see this, on the one hand, a capacity for great good and a capacity for great evil, right? I mean, I'm not sure, like, is it right for him to take that money? I don't know if that was the right thing to do. I don't know. But, I mean, we see what great good can be done if he did take it, right? But then on the one hand, we see that there's another dynamic at play, his pride. And as somebody was pointing out, his pride was enough that he wouldn't take the money. It wasn't enough for him to fight the duel.
I'm just thinking out loud because I hadn't thought about it until we actually started talking about that she was engaged to Dmitri. He was the one who shamed him in public. So now he's taking the money, sort of like from Dmitri. So he's being bought off.
Maybe.
But his son told his father that he would pay.
I mean, there's no question that he knew that it was coming from Ketcha, who was engaged to Dmitri. There's no question. Yeah, maybe. That he couldn't, because inadvertently, indirectly, it is kind of coming from Dmitri, right? It's an act of charity on the part of Dmitri, at least indirectly.
He's being bought off.
Yes, that's true. So again, I don't know. I mean, was it the right, did he do the right thing? I don't know.
He stressed in his argument that Dmitri had, insulted Katrina, and also just like you. So you're like a brother and sister because you've both been insulted by me.
Mm-hmm.
So he was trying to work on that.
Earlier. But maybe it wasn't pride, like if he took the money and then he lost his son, right? Like that his son was ashamed.
Yes, exactly.
So it's
the honor is from his son.
Pride. His family relation was more important than the money.
It seems everything is just all.
Yeah, that is true. Well, I mean, we can't underscore how difficult that decision must have been. It must have been an incredibly difficult decision. It must have been enough to drive him mad. He said, what trick? A pretty trick. So I think that would have been a very difficult thing for him to do. Because he probably knew that it could do so much good. But
anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed. Of course, that's true. Right. I don't know. I mean, what really was her motivation? Okay. Yeah, I guess that's right. All right. Well, we got through everything today pretty quickly. It didn't go a full 2 hours like last time. Any thoughts or any reflection? Oh, yeah. Well, there is. And I don't. We haven't been introduced to all of the characters still, but the main, right. A little bit. There are a lot of opportunities to talk about theology. Maybe we should talk about theology.
So it becomes more literature. But see, that may be all wrong. That's just my opinion. Explain to us.
I spent a semester on the Grand Inquisitor.
Full semester? Wow. Oh, my gosh. It is. Yeah, that's true. I mean, that is actually a very central point for the whole book, but I can't imagine spending, I don't even know how you could do that. So what were you reflecting on, the philosophy? Yeah, okay. Okay, gotcha. Okay. Yeah, for sure. For sure you could do that. I could definitely do that too. That's right. Wow. So what are some of the theological elements here? I think that an important theological element is asking the question, and I think it's an underlying theme of especially the first book on the sensualist. Is it nature or is it nurture? Is it more nature or nurture? Are we more determined by our nature than we are by our own ability to curb our nature? Where does this play itself out more especially? In Alyosha. Alyosha is kind of accused by Rakitin being a sensualist himself, right? So, and even he himself says, I'm a sensualist too. I can't deny my heritage. I can't deny, you know, my family. I'm a Karamazov. So I am a sensualist. But what does that mean though, to be a sensualist? Does Dostoevsky see himself as a sensualist? I think he does, 100%. It's to be driven by our emotions. It's to be more driven by emotion than by reason. But what we see in the sensualist is that it's not just, we might think that it's the most base of sensuality, right? Lust. But that's not necessarily what's motivating it. What's deeper than lust is the pride, isn't it? Doesn't pride seem to be what's deeper in this case? Yeah.
Well, Lexi, I'll say that to avoid the name pronunciation. Doesn't seem to be motivated either by pride or lust.
Right. Yeah, we're kind of told something. I skipped over this part, I guess, unfortunately, but
he sees a sense of obligation.
Remember, it kind of goes back to what Father Zosima said to Madame Holikoff, right? It's about active love, capacity for active love. Alyosha is determined largely by that. That's what motivates him. And he can't get around that either. Page 169. So, and with which of them was Alyosha to sympathize? And what was he to wish for each of them? He loved them both, but what could he desire for each in the midst of these conflicting interests? I might go quite astray in this maze. And Alyosha's heart could not endure uncertainty because his love was always an active character. He was incapable of passive love. If he loved anyone, he set to work at once to help them. To do so, he must know what he was aiming at. He must know for certain what was best for each, and having ascertained this, it's natural for him to help them both. Well, I think it's important. Dostoevsky often has a Christological figure in his text. Is it clear that Alyosha is the Christological figure? Maybe it's not. Sure. So there's multiple Christ-like figures here. But I think that this goes back to something that's really important that Father Zosima says to Madame Holikoff, and that is that you must love actively. You must have active love, in a love that is self-sacrificial. And we're told here that Alyosha is not capable of passive love. He can only love actively. That's a good description. That's a good characterization. I mean, it's basically saying that Alyosha, unlike Madame Holikoff, who can't seem to love actively, right? Alyosha can't help but to love actively, right?
So he pulled someone's sin active. Well, he never was not there.
Yeah.
So it's true that
he sees the good in everyone. Loves all his
brothers, father.
That's why I say it's really Alyosha that kind of stands as a Christological figure, because he seems to be the one that is able to love actively. He isn't motivated by pride. He can't even be motivated, seems to be motivated by pride, right? So he's maybe the one individual, the one character that stands out in contrast to everyone else. Everyone else seems to be motivated by, I think the principal sin is pride. Right? Ketcha.
Yeah. The only term is often not motivated.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that, so there's some theology there, right? Not just Karamazov, but all seem to be motivated by that. Maybe the only exception is Zossima and Alyosha. But Father Zossima, we're going to find out more about him. He has a history. He has a past. So we're going to find out. Great question. Huh. I think...
That's false self. That's false.
I think it's false self. Yeah, his buffoonery is a way of... I don't know. That's a great question. He lies to himself. Be honest to yourself. That was his critique of him. I think pride, he definitely wants to conquer Grushenka in contrast to Dmitri. He definitely, I mean, part of it is a competition between Dmitri and Fyodor Pavlovich, right? He wants to be able to, says, if I just had his looks, his youth.
I have money instead.
Yes. And I need every bit of it. So you're not getting any of it. I intend to live the next 20 years. Well, very good. We didn't say a whole lot about Yvonne, but we'll get more there too. Each character is quite different. Yeah, they're quite different. I mean, literally all of them are different, aren't they? Okay. Well, very good.
What is our next meeting?
Good question.
Next meeting, yes, November 6th.
6th?
Yeah.
Uh-oh. Sixth. Are you serious? Okay, I got a lot of work to do.
Yeah, it is the 6th. I can't remember. We had to move it up from the middle of November for some reason.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so we'll do books 5 and 6 for the next session. See you later.